If I speak for 5 minutes about something about Lent in my tradition and what Lent means to me. So for those of you who don't know, I'm from a Lutheran background, and Lutherans are a liturgical tradition that follows the church year and the common lectionary and the colours of the church season. So if you walk into a traditional Lutheran church, it looks quite a lot like an Anglican church. You'll have banners, and most church ladies' guilds have faithfully sewn beautiful, sometimes slightly weird, banners to represent the different seasons of the church. So it will change. So as a child growing up, one of the strong visual memories is the colour changing each time. And because about half the year is green, it's terribly exciting when the colour's something else. And we call it I call it the green season. And we go, oh, we're in the green. It's the 31st week of the green season. That's not quite 30. I think it goes for 24 weeks in a long year, the green season. So Lent is purple in the Lutheran Church, and it's the 6 weeks before Easter. It's 46 days, but you don't count Sundays in Lent. It's the 40 days before Easter plus Sundays. And it's a traditional time of penitence. My family didn't observe Lent particularly strongly. We strongly observe Advent in our home, which is a parallel season before Christmas. But within the church services on Sundays growing up, it was very strong because of the colour and because all the hallelujahs get taken out of the liturgy through Lent, which in the sung liturgy and the spoken liturgy, there's a lot of places where we say hallelujah every week in the Lutheran church, and they get just taken out. And, of course, everyone always makes a mistake somewhere and accidentally goes, ah! Then realises the whole rest of the place is not saying hallelujah. And it's very amusing when you're little. So in terms of my growing up, Holy Week, which is the week from Palm Sunday to Easter, my mother in particular really did observe very strongly. And I remember once when I was a teenager, her being absolutely furious that I was going out to a movie with my boyfriend in that week, because it was considered, she just thought that was a completely inappropriate thing to do in the week leading up to Easter. That was such a holy time that should be observed with a quietness, I suppose, and a solemnness. As an adult, then, I suppose it was probably a trendy thing to do as a active, engaged young adult in that community to do something for Lent, and we'd often give something up, and we'd often tell each other about what we were giving up and be terribly proud of it. Usually something like chocolate. I used to say I'm giving up beer and sex as a long-term single person that didn't drink alcohol. But I don't give that up for Lent anymore. so either of them. Well, I don't drink beer. But but that style of going without, and that the focus was on how well can we do at going without. And at some point I became aware that the real point of that was to focus us towards Jesus, and what is the thing we're not getting rid of, where we're trying to reconnect with the holiness that we're heading towards, and the miraculous something that we can't understand of Easter that we're heading for. And that going without was a way of teaching us gratitude, that to be grateful. And so for some years I took up an active practice of gratitude for Lent rather than a practice of going without. One year I chose to write a card to somebody, once 40 people, so somebody every day who'd been important in my life, to say thank you to them. Another year I gave up whining. That was the hardest thing I ever did. I didn't make it. I never did that again. What it did make me aware of was how central to Australian culture complaint is. I just couldn't socialise. And really, that is the point of a Lenten discipline, is to give us awareness of stuff we don't see when we just rumble along. I'm not very good at discipline anymore, if I ever was. But the structure of the church year and of seasons like Lent, I find useful for me to as a reminder, because it's easier for me to say I can do something for 6 weeks and then I can stop. So I grabbed this pile off my shelf this morning. I was amazed how many there were of Lenten things. And some years I've attempted to read through one. This is my one for this year. It's the smallest one in the collection. This one I must have liked. I remember reading that 2 different years. And this one Tyson and I did a couple of years. We read it aloud to each other. We never did the whole lot because it's 3 times a day, but that was before we had children. Anyway, other than the one that I'm reading this year, I'm going to leave them on the table and you can have a look. If there's something in there you'd like to borrow, I'm very happy for that to be a resource for other people to use. And I have to say, I don't think I've ever in my life managed to read every reading in a Lenten book. I always get to a day and go, oh, I'm 4 behind, I've got to catch up again. So in terms of what Lent is for me now, I think it's a useful structure that helps me to reorient when otherwise I would just roll along fairly easily without doing anything to check myself. So, are we taking questions as well, or you want to let someone else talk first? Yeah. Okay. My birthday's the 10th of April, so I feel your pain. my 21st was on Good Friday. We did have a thing, but my parents were not around. As in, they lived in a different state. They didn't choose not to come. So if it falls right on the Easter weekend like that, we wouldn't have done it on the day. In fact, I actually think we may have done it the weekend before. I can't remember now. But yeah, we would usually break fast to have my birthday if we were doing. But as I say, as a family, we weren't doing it that strongly. I had to personally, the years that I was, 21 and very keen and giving up chocolate and sweets, and then I had to have a birthday in the middle of it, I had to wrestle with myself about whether I would be failing if I ate cake. In very strict observances, there would be people who just never got a birthday or got a very subdued birthday year after year. Yeah. I was born on Easter Sunday, so yeah. In fact, my father's a clergyman, and if there's 5 kids in my family, 2 of us were born on Easter Sunday. It's very inconvenient for a clergyman. Actually, I haven't communicated Lent with them. They know, because I'll often sit and read this in the morning with my cup of tea, and so they'll see me doing that. And as so far, they haven't asked me any tricky questions. I'm hoping they will, and then we'll have a conversation. But, I haven't done it to them yet. It's for the tape, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, it's not. Oh, yes, it is. So, yeah. What's your experience?
Ken's question for the tape was, how have I found the season of Lent scenes being here? I happened to read my journal this week. It was 10 years this week since I joined Mount Hawthorne formally. So I've been here a while. Even though some part of me still feels like a newbie. And when I first started coming here, Lent and Easter were the hardest times. Particularly Easter camp was so foreign to my way of doing Easter. Our tradition of doing Easter was to attend service on Thursday night, to attend service, a very solemn service on Friday morning. Last Easter I gave you some taste of that, to attend a very joyful service on Sunday morning and to observe a quietness through that time and observance. So Easter camp was just, I actually found it extremely challenging the first few years, and because Lent's a private discipline, the lack of Lent in church here didn't affect me that greatly. Although I must have been enough troubled by it when I was on the worship rostery group, I started trying to get them to do Lenty things. So, but because it's more for me a private discipline than a public shared discipline, the lack of Advent I struggled with more in the worship space, which is why I've made more effort to make you all do Advent with me.
There's a comment rather than question, but just echoing what you said, coming from an Anglican tradition, it was difficult to adapt, particularly to Easter camp, but other things as well. I mean, it was convenient. We're both on the service leader preaching roster at the same time because, you know, we could work all that Lent and Advent stuff in and, you know, who was going to argue with us? When I've had the creative energy to and had an idea, you know, odd occasions, I think I've tried to pitch something in here as well. But I guess I've adapted, and I guess there must be lots of other people here who've had that same thing. I mean, it stays with you, doesn't it? You know, so even if it's not something that we're collectively doing, it shapes what you have to offer to the rest of the congregation.
Thanks. The other thing I was going to comment, I meant to say, the Godly Play resources have a really beautiful way of doing Lent that we're doing with the children. This is the third year now that we've been doing this with the children. And they talk about... they talk about Easter as a mystery, and Bevan told the story to them a few weeks ago where there's a puzzle, a two-sided puzzle, one side's purple and one side's white. And we talk about how sometimes people can walk straight into a mystery and not even know it's there. You need time to get ready to enter a mystery, and the puzzle is actually a cross, and it's a purple cross. And then this is the way. We've got six pieces for the 6 weeks of Lent. We enter into the mystery, and then when we get there, we turn the cross over, it's this radiance of the mystery when we enter it having prepared for it. And with the children, we are telling the life of Jesus in seven parts through this season, slowly unrolling it and encouraging them to make connections between that and all the other stories they hear in the year, which it's one of the, I think, the highlights of the Godly Play curriculum that we do with them, is this idea of the language of entering a mystery and how do we prepare ourselves to enter a mystery. Someone else was going to speak, was it?
Hello, Peter rang me during the week and said, would you like to talk for 5 minutes about what the Lenten tradition was in my exposure to the Catholic Church? And I said, well, that'd probably take about a minute, and Peter said that'll be fine. So, and there we've got two speakers to cover 40 minutes. okay, so I'm not a spokesperson for the Catholic Church, that's for sure, but I was brought up in the Kalgoorlie Catholic environment. So I come to Perth in 1973, so my experience is growing up 60s and early 70s. So our family was, our dad didn't go, wasn't a Catholic, but he'd come to church sometimes, but the rest of us did. Mum was, so we observed the Lenten tradition, which was, seemed to go to church a bit more often. Ash Wednesday, we didn't eat meat on Fridays, Ash Wednesday, Fridays and Good Friday. And I believe it's now just Ash Wednesday and Good Friday. You have to abstain. I haven't sort of followed it closely. But I suppose just being a kid, and this is probably my problem, and I think there's obviously a proper meaning to Lent, that I just looked at the deprivation bit, as Rani said, and there are all these other things linked, probably not only with the Catholic churches, but other organised churches of... you know, so if you didn't do the Lenten thing, it was a sin, and fire and brimstone and all that sort of stuff. So Once I come out of into adulthood, many great things have been brought up as a Christian in a Catholic tradition, but this fire and brimstone stuff and negativity, and I've just totally rejected it as nonsense. Self-flagellation is completely unnecessary, I believe. But probably unfortunately I've lumped Lent in with that, and there's probably some good symbolic things and Lent, and I like your words, renewal, and Rani, and what Claire said about gratitude. I think that's fantastic, and maybe I need to explore it a bit further and take it a bit more seriously. But as I said, it probably got lumped in with all my rejection of certain aspects, which I don't know whether they were the 60s or 70s things that have gone out of most Christian faiths. That's what I love about this church, that we, this community, that we focus on the loving, the kindness of God, and just reject all this other stuff, negativity. So that's my experience. I've sort of, since I come to Perth, I've just ad hoc go to Catholic services, mainly for weddings and funerals. But yeah, it's fine. I have no problem with the Catholic Church. I'm not so much into the ritual stuff, which they do every Sunday. But this is more fun. So anyway, that's all I got.
Brought up in the Catholic Church, so it was drummed into us that we shouldn't eat meat on Good Friday. And when I was at uni, I went away with a group of fellow students, and at some point I realised that I'd had meat on Good Friday. So I went home and confessed to Mum, like something really bad would happen to me. And she said, "Well, what did you have?" And I said, "Well, I had Kentucky Fried Chicken." And she said, "Oh, that's okay. That's chicken. That's okay." So, but I've got no idea why you should or shouldn't or could or wouldn't, or whether you have, you know, do you know the history to that, of, as to why you shouldn't have meat? Or perhaps I should better off stay in ignorance, and then I'll be okay.
No, but your mum's interpretation is a very Catholic interpretation of how to follow the scripture. It's usually a good way you can work out how to get out of these sort of things.
I could be wrong, but I think that some pope in the distant past made this decree about not eating meat on Fridays to bolster the fish trade. I understand it's true.
Yeah, it sounds logical, that's for sure. For an economic reason.
Yes, that sounds right. But I do know that even earlier, at one stage, fish was the food of the poor. Fish was plentiful, and I can't recall the exact area or the time, but fish was the food of the poor. There was plenty of it, and it was cheap, whereas wealthy people didn't eat fish. They ate meat. Slaughtered meat. And that was the privilege of the wealthy. And that's where the idea of only eating fish on Friday originated. But it's been rather corrupted since. And I remember as a kid, my mum was brought up as a Catholic too, and she was very strict about this no meat on Friday. But she used to cook the most wonderful fish and egg dishes that I really looked forward to it, and I couldn't quite see the point.
Friday's a traditional fasting day in the older churches. So, I mean, this goes back to the very, very earliest days of Christianity, where people would fast, and to help them focus on prayer and so forth, they do this on Wednesdays and Fridays. A lot of Orthodox still do this. It's written in very early writings from the first century. Do not be like the hypocrites. They fast on Mondays and Thursdays. So you will fast on Wednesday and Friday.
I grew up in the Brethren tradition. The Brethren, that is not the exclusive Brethren, it's called the Open Brethren, not the people who all the ladies look so lovely with their long hair and their little scarves on their heads. Sorry. Yes, the Open Brethren is strict, evangelical, conservative, I think boring is another word, which sums quite well. But the important thing about us Brethren is that we were right. I didn't realise that we were anti-Catholic as I was growing up. All the stuff about having particular days and particular seasons and doing things at a particular time and giving things up, if it wasn't explicit in the Bible, or to be more precise, in the teachings of Paul, then the Brethren probably wouldn't have anything to do with it. And there was a smugness about that. There was a self-satisfied, we're right and you're wrong about that. So Lent didn't really exist, although occasionally you'd hear somebody say, I'm giving it up for Lent, and there was a joke. It was just a joke. They weren't being actually serious about that. Come on to that picture in a second. I think the smugness was also, there was also a fair amount of hypocrisy in the Brethren, the church that I grew up in, thought that we'd got it right. There was a lot of things which crept in, which were, I think, un-Christian. One of which was attitude to Sundays, which was, the Sabbath was holy, and you didn't play football on a Sunday. If you've ever seen Chariots of Fire, Eric Liddell, that's exactly the attitude that I grew up with. And I got told off for not just playing football on a Sunday, but basically even looking at a football on a Sunday. And Jesus said that the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. And Jesus turned that kind of teaching on its head, but nonetheless the rules were very strict. But Lent itself, no, nothing. Lent was no different. That stuck with me to a great degree. There is still in my head a Brethren voice which says, hang on, if you're going to be good during Lent, why can't you be good all the time? And it is a reasonable question, I think. This picture, I asked Rani to put this picture up and have the service. It's actually got nothing to do with Lent specifically, although I do like what Lani said about God leaning in. But Lent is the time that leads up to Easter. Easter is an extremely important occasion, and it's for me, this picture, it shows what God is trying to do at Easter. It shows what God is actually trying to do all the time. Here we are drowning, basically, and God is reaching down to us and saying, you don't have to do this, you don't have to give that up, you don't have to do anything, just hang on and let me pull you up out of the water. So what does Lent mean to me? Actually almost nothing, but it is the pointing towards Easter, which I think is the resurrection. The God's actions at Easter are what enable us to grab hold of Jesus's hand and be lifted up. Right. Elise, where's the...
I grew up in a totally atheist household, and I guess my question is for the congregation who didn't. My sense now is that the churches are moving towards each other, so they are taking things from each other's traditions. What do we make of that, I guess, is my question. Is my sense other people's sense? And what does that mean? If that is happening, how is that just people being people? Or can we ask something of God about that?
I can give you a 10-minute response to that. Anybody else want to give us? Paul?
Didn't think I had anything to say today, but I've been reading. I took home a pamphlet that must have been the printout from a talk here by Neville Watson, putting it into context in relation to Elise's question, is this big picture of Christians driven by love, and then the state joined in and we got power, which he calls Christendom, Neville's, I was struck that in Neville's talk he said, that's over. That's over. We're starting again from the heart. So probably if that's the way it is, we can give up all this struggle about whether we've got it right or not and just get on with it. But Christendom with power is over. Yeah. That was the message I got. So we are in that space, and it's probably a very long space. It's probably a century of space or something, but we just cruise along in there and paddle every time it gets rough.
I'd just like to comment on Elise's question, which I think is a good one, but I like the way we're doing it here. We're not just taking on traditions because they're traditions and that's what we've always done without thinking of them. We're sort of picking and choosing and looking at what it means and why it means and what's appropriate and what's helpful, and I think that's a good process to continue.
I had the experience of growing up in a you know, similar to you, an evangelical conservative Baptist church, but I had the additional influence of having a father who was at one time training to become a priest in Italy, and when a Catholic priest, and one of the conditions when he met my mother, who at that time was a Baptist in Italy, which is a catch-all for anyone who's not a Catholic, the condition for him marrying her was to renounce his Catholicism. And so I grew up in a house where we weren't allowed to have pictures up because that was a graven image. And Dad was very much bouncing off of that anything that smacked of Catholicism was bad. And of course, growing up in a Baptist church, that they already had that sense of that if it's coming out of a Catholic church, then it can't be Christian. So I've got a terrible kind of baggage. And it's really hard to escape that baggage. So as I've grown older, and I've grown with great admiration for those people who have that sacramental organ in their psychic existence, I don't have that. And one of the reasons why I don't have much of an internal kind of structured life is because of that it was drummed out of me when I was a kid. So I'm very much in the moment, whatever. You know, it's Easter, is it? Whereas I really value those people who can take hold of that structure beforehand. I can't do that. I'd have no desire to do that, but I recognise it's a really good thing for those people who do.
I grew up in Presbyterian church, as a lot of you did. We didn't really... It was a giving up of something. But I had... I've still got a very Catholic friend. And she used to give up wine for Lent and put the money in an envelope and give it to an orphanage and feel really good about herself. And that idea of if you can be good for Lent, why not good for the rest of the year? And I sort of wonder what's good about giving up wine and, you know... So I used to be conflicted with all of that. My father was Catholic, my mother was Protestant. Catholics were idolatrous and all the rest of it, so we grew up with all of that. You know, they're all bad, and they've made it their own religion, and they think they're right, but we know we're right, sort of thing. So all of that was going on. I love the fact that Claire and others have brought the Lent... all of the liturgy into Mount Hawthorn, because I love it, and I love Advent and the leading up, and I love the readings that go along with Lent, and the fact that we a couple of times had ash on our foreheads, and I love, and I didn't grow up with it, and it wasn't part of me, but I love it now, and it's because you've brought it here and we've embraced it and allowed it to happen, so thank you. And that's what I love about here. We bring things and we can take it, or it doesn't have to be important to us, but we can, and we grow in our own ways, but we grow together. So, yeah, I love Lent. And I don't have to give up something. It's a drawing closer to God.
I really agree with everything that's been said so far, and my upbringing was in a Methodist / Uniting Church tradition, which probably fell somewhere in the middle of the completely reject the whole seasonality and that sort of thing of perhaps some of the people's Baptist experiences and others, but and it certainly wasn't anything like a Catholic tradition. But I think there's something in the fact that traditions can become very stale. They just become things that you rotely do over and over and over. And there is a value in stepping away from that and perhaps then coming back to it refreshed and looking at the true meaning of it, both individually and collectively. And I think in some respects that's what we're doing as a group here, and hopefully picking up on Elisa's question too, maybe that's a movement that's being shared more broadly.
Yeah, I'm sure that's Elisa. I mean, I can just see it happening, you know, and it's happening not through committees, which is what the ecumenical movement is. You join a committee and meet with some other people from another group, and usually at the top of the tree, and try and work out what your differences are. People are talking to each other, and they're not focusing on differences, they're focusing on what we have in common, and it's a movement of the spirit as far as I can see. God's doing something, and it's just great. And yeah. Sorry, Michael.
The last comment about the disciplines reminded me of, I mean, this is not new to you, but a book that I think changed my life in some ways and why I'm still a Christian from 1979-80 was Richard Foster's book, Celebration of Discipline, in which he goes through, he talks about the place of discipline or tradition, which is not to make us closer to God, but to help us get ourselves in the place where God can show up. And he does, he talks about the paints a really practical picture of the individual and collective disciplines of the church that we practice to support each other in our journey with God. And that's what that made me think of. And I think we are. We are, because of the eclectic nature of this church, what Thelma said, I just love. I love the fact that I feel like we get the best gifts of different traditions here with all the baggage dropped away. And I'm really grateful for it.